Three times means good times on NBC. In a short while, Theater Guild on the Air brings to radio listeners a one-hour adaptation of F. Scott Fitzgerald's exciting novel, This Side of Paradise, starring Richard Widmark and Nina Forsch. And for quiz fun in your Sunday evening lineup, hear accordion-playing quizmaster Phil Baker as he asks the $64 question. Transcribed.
From Hollywood, NBC brings you Hedda Hopper. This tonight's news brought to life by the Andrews sisters, Richard Carlson, and Charles Boyer. And here she is, from the desk by the window looking right down on Hollywood and Vine, Hedda Hopper.
Hello, everybody. Jerome Kern's widow will marry George Byron, young New York singer, before the end of this month. Pauline Gray and producer Stanley Rubin have discussed marriage and will set the date on her return from New York. Sir Charles Mengel, out of respect for his late wife, Elsie, will wait for a year and then expects to marry Yvonne Riley. Janet Leigh and Tony Curtis will be in New York together the end of May, and the kid from Brooklyn who made good in Hollywood will show his girl the town. The day Rita Hayworth arrived in New York, I got a letter from a friend of hers in Paris. We believe this is certain to be the end of Rita and Ali's living together, although they'll insist for some time that it's not a separation. There probably won't be a divorce until one of them wants to get married again. She'll likely avoid trouble longer than Rita will avoid falling in love again. The poor creatures, two different worlds. Lena Loy, instead of coming to Hollywood to make a picture, entered the Washington Hospital for a minor operation. Barbara Stanwyck tells me she is not carrying a torch for Bob Taylor, nor is she planning a reconciliation. Gloria DeHaven is grounded. She's had her driver's license taken away from her. She's had 4 tickets in 6 months, 3 for speeding, 1 for not giving way to a pedestrian. In a few hours, 3 famous ladies will board a plane for Minneapolis and a triumphant return to their native city. The occasion? 15 years of unprecedented success in show business as America's top singing trio. 100 million records of their voices sold throughout the world. Of course, it's the Andrews sisters who haven't stopped rocking and socking the world from the time you first heard them sing. In the air. Here's one just made by Decca. I Remember Mama, sung by the 3 Andrews sisters.
Mm-hmm.
The Voice of America called the Andrews sisters the three most listened to women in the history of the world. And it's so easy to see why. Since June Allison and Dick Powell had so much trouble with the Tennessee Adoption Agency, they're planning to open an adoption agency here themselves, with Dick as president, to make certain the children will be protected after they find proper homes. William Moorings, who reviews pictures for Tidings and many Catholic newspapers, was barred from all previews at Columbia Studio after he labeled Born Yesterday communistic propaganda. Among other things, he wrote, "The picture is the most diabolically clever political satire I have encountered in almost 30 years of steady film reviewing. It's spiked with Marxism." Jane Russell and Vic Mature are waiting on salary, while the Las Vegas Story, which was written by Paul Jericho, is being entirely rewritten by someone else. Jericho was subpoenaed to appear before the Un-American Activities Committee, and the rewrite was ordered because Howard Hughes refuses to have Jericho's name on his screen. How to get along in Hollywood?
Miss Harper, may I say that your hat is the most beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Richard Carlson, you don't have to do that to get along in Hollywood. In fact, my item was that you're doing fine. After such pictures as King Solomon's Mines and Valentino, you're now being co-starred with Jane Wyman and the Blue Veil. On top of that, you're a playwright, prolific magazine writer, a successful
business. Wait a minute, Hedda. You don't have to do all that to get an item out of me.
No, but one bouquet deserves another.
But, Hedda, I'm also a serious-minded young man who takes advice. That's my item.
What?
Your advice, Hedda. Be nice to reporters. Be cooperative with studios. Everything you've said in this column, Hedda. And I've listened to every word and I've done everything. How to get along in Hollywood.
Richard, aren't you sweet? Well, how are you getting along?
I got an ulcer.
You have?
I also have a nervous tic and my wife is knitting me a straitjacket.
Dick, not from taking my advice.
Oh, it's all right, Hedda. It's all right. The things an actor should do and shouldn't do. It's good advice. It's fine. It just won't work, that's all.
Why not?
Example. The public must think of an actor as a glamorous figure. All right, so suppose I'm an actor. What do? I get me a fur-lined swimming pool, naturally, and a Buick with five holes and a troupe of Balinese dancers for the front lawn.
Well, that's middle-of-the-road sort of glamour.
But?
Well?
You next tell an actor he's supposed to be careful about taking parts. He's supposed to wait for the right parts.
Yes, I have said that.
But does the swimming pool wait for water? Does the Buick wait for gas? Do the Balinese girls wait for food?
Oh, Dick, stop it. What kind of a thing?
All right, so I'm exaggerating. But you get my complaint, don't you, Hedda? The two pieces of advice won't fit. A guy'd go broke.
Well, I didn't exactly mean that an actor...
Well, take another example. You said one week that actors should stick to their type. Another week you said actors should not allow themselves to be typecast. Trash. The guy's out of work again.
But I still don't quite get it, what you're trying to do.
No, Hedda, all kidding aside, I've noticed there's one subject you've never really explored in this column. To be a Hollywood star is to be in the public eye, sure. But how does being there feel? How does it feel to live in a goldfish bowl?
Well, what's your complaint?
Well, don't get the wrong idea. I'm happy. I like it. But goldfish do get plenty of advice, and they never get a chance to hand it back.
Oh, so that's it. Goldfish advises columnists.
Sometimes stories are printed that are a little embarrassing. Maybe you could help, Hedda. For instance, why so much emphasis on an actor's personal life?
Because the public's interested.
Yeah, but if it's that interesting, then his wife's liable to read it.
Well, Dick, that doesn't apply to you.
Or now you take his business life. You publicize how busy and successful he is. He gets letters from his relatives, like Uncle Sam. Or if you tell about the part that he's not getting, then people say he's a has-been.
I know, it's a problem.
Now, don't get me wrong. I love publicity, Hedda, but it seems to me that you fill your column with too many facts.
Oh, Dick, you've got something. Let's see. No facts. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight all about Richard Carlson.
Well?
Period. The end.
Hey, now, wait a minute, Hedda.
Good night, Dick. But all kidding aside, it's perfectly true. Advice is a mighty tricky business on either side of the fence, in Hollywood or anywhere else. Do you remember Baby LeRoy, who starred in pictures with the late W.C. Fields? Well, he's been serving Hollywood stars in his father's delicatessen. He's 18 now and enlisting in the Army. I asked Marlena Dietrich to explain her glamour. She said, well, sir. Well, then give me your beauty hints, and Marlena said, it's soap, water, and an unworried mind. Jack Benny may be Claudette Colbert's co-star in Don't Call Me Mother, and if he ever did call her mother, there'd be a dead comic in our time. Clark Abel out of Cedars of Lebanon Hospital and into the arms of Sylvia. Linda Darnell asked her studio for an hour off to attend the funeral of Ivan Kahn, the man who discovered her and put her on the screen. Jean Porter, Mrs. Eddie Dimitrik, is playing the lead in G.I. Jane. Her husband is one of the 10 writers who spent a year in jail for refusing to answer the $64 question. June Haver stopped in Mexico City on her way home from South America to photograph the bullfights in color. She'll show the movies to GIs when she visits our hospitals. Dorothy Lamour and Bill Howard celebrated 8 years of happiness yesterday. Betty Garbo sold her big house in Beverly. While she lived in it, she occupied only 2 rooms. Now she can't decide whether to buy a tiny house here or settle for a New York apartment. I wish she'd make up her mind to do a picture everybody wants to see her on the screen again. Last week, a highlight of this column was provided by Agnes Moorhead from the wonderful First Drama Quartet, where that same group has achieved the most perfect bit of casting I've seen in years, in placing Charles Boyer in George Bernard Shaw's Don Juan in Hell.
Hey, Dan. You mean perfect because I am put in the right place?
Why, Charles, of course not. It's because... who else could be a more perfect Don Juan?
Oh, Don Juan's not perfect.
Well, why do you think women like him?
I suppose the eternal foolishness of women.
Oh, I don't know. There's something fascinating about the calculating male. The cold-blooded one who uses his romantic powers so expertly.
Well, to forget the play, Hedda, I can't really be that country Casbah fellow forever, you know. In fact, in my next release... The First Legion, I play a priest.
Yes, and in Rage of the Vulture with Alan Ladd, you play an Indian. But I'll never forget you as that Don Juan in Mexico. Remember in Hold Back the Dawn?
Ah, but even then I reformed, didn't I? I fell in love with a girl. In fact, the caddy's Romanian refugee finally became quite noble.
Oh, but before you did, in the first part of the picture, what a completely beautiful rat.
From Don Juan in Hell to Don Juan in Mexico. All right, Hedda, you won't like me, but here we go. There is a desperate town that straddles the border between Mexico and California. There is a wire fence. You can see right through it into the United States. And if you are an American or you have a visa, you just walk in. Yes, the wire fence. But don't let them tell you it's only 12 feet high. It's 1,000 miles high. The main street of this town is called the Calle Ruiz. Looks like what you would expect outside a back door. An ash pile, a rubbish heap, a dump of a town baking in the heat. But for some crazy reason, Americans like to go there on weekends or holidays, like the 4th of July.
Come down. Drink up, baby.
Hey, come back here. You need a baby.
I'll be back in a minute, Joe.
keep on your shelf. Just somebody I noticed over here, that's all. Here, boys. I'm the player keeping a little good for a change, huh? Now it is on the dance sensation.
Anita.
Of the Riviera. Georgie Sabescu and Anita Cordier.
Anita. What are you doing here?
I moved on for the day from Los Angeles with some people. Those drunk at the bar. It's not the same, Anita, George.
It's not the same, George. Sit down, please. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tequila?
Thank you. Tequila. 1935, the casino at Cannes.
Yes, you left in a cloud of sky pies and chinchilla. What was his name?
The Baron Ashton.
All I remember is his black eye.
Oh, don't throw him in my face. You and that Mrs. Sweeney threatening to divorce her husband and all his sons.
The life of Mrs. Sweeney was a platinum cigarette lighter. Now, I use these. Yeah, from Cartier's to a pawn shop in Mexico. Money. There is so little of it these days, except in the United States.
So that's it. You're waiting here to get across the border.
Yes, several hundred others. I find it is not an original idea to be an American citizen.
But you're Romanian, the quota for Romanian.
6 years it will take me to get through that fence. Come, have some more tequila. Well, you were no lucky, I guess. Isn't it only 2 years for the Spanish quota?
4 years. Only I did not wait that long.
How did you get in?
Isn't this a beautiful room? See? Orange blossom. Meet Mrs. Fantasy. I married an American. In 4 weeks I was across the border.
You are an American citizen. 4 weeks?
Anita, where are you, Anita?
Is that your husband?
No. Fantasy was a jockey in Caliente. About for 3. Once over the border, I went to a judge. A woman wants a man, I told him, not a radiator cap. He was granted. He stood out.
Very smart, Anita.
As simple as that.
Oh, it's as easy as that. Get hold of a wedding ring, you can swing right over that fence. What do they call it? The pursuit of happiness. But hurry, there's no time to lose, because this is the day when the town is full of Americans.
Oh, what in the name of...
Oh, firecracker.
Boy, stop there. I told you not to throw things out of the car. Now stop it.
Well, yeah, that's wrong.
You apologize this instant. Go on,
I'll stop the car.
You apologize.
I think I should be spared an apology, madam. Good day.
Wait, please, you must apologize. It's a matter of discipline.
Your form of humor I do not appreciate.
You see, we're from Azusa. This is a sort of annual event that I take the boys to my classes.
I could not be less efficient, madam. I hope you have this heated trip back to Azusa. The cows are honking at you. Now it's a good time to stop.
Azusa? Of all the nasty chocolate. Get your head back here, boys. Now look what you've done.
Aye, madam. Oh, sure. You only smashed the radiator. The radiators are supposed to have holes, aren't they? Good day.
I guess it really was my fault, Miss Brown. Miss Brown?
Miss Brown. Miss Brown. Miss Brown. Well, perhaps my temper was a little hasty. Perhaps I could be at some assistance. Miss Brown? Really not your fault. If the mechanic doesn't have all the necessary parts for your car.
But Mr. McAdams, the principal, you think we're dead in a ditch.
Oh, of course. So you will telephone from my hotel.
That operator? Yes, operator, I'll wait. But it's an Azusa precinct.
Miss Brown. Would you take off your hat, please?
Well, all right. There.
Oh. Your name is not Margot.
It's Annie.
She had the same hair, Only it was always must by the wind that winter and summer mix.
Who are you talking about?
Oh, never mind. You are alive, and she's dead. As only a lying woman can be dead, as a man's heart can be dead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, now just look at me, Miss Brown. Please, keep looking at me. It's like a sudden breeze on a stifling day.
You're the strangest man.
Perhaps the loneliest man.
Oh, yes, Miss McKinnon. I mean, hello. Oh, no, I can't stay all night here. I mean, we can't.
Of course you can. You and the children can all sleep here in the lobby. There are enough couches and armchairs. But somehow these shabby walls will not seem so empty and sad. You will be here, close, very near to me, under the same roof, breathing in the same night.
Oh.
She had a hard time going to sleep that night, Miss Brown. And then, about 5 o'clock in the morning...
What are you doing here? Please, you have no right to be here.
Of course I have no right. No right to be here. No right to sit watching your face, learning it like a poem. No right to tell you that I love you very much.
You must go away right now, please.
Oh, you needn't be afraid, Miss Brown. You see, it's growing light already. Soon they'll be waking up. The shops will open, and you will be gone forever.
Oh, it's getting light, isn't it? Oh, no, no, please, don't touch me.
Oh, you needn't be afraid. It's like a classroom, isn't it? The pupils and their teacher, the rules of deportment, and schedules, and discipline. You are very conscientious, Miss Brown. No infringement of the regulations for you. No rebellions, no violent desires. If you found one in your sober little mind, you would tell it to go and stand in the corner, wouldn't you, Miss Brown?
I don't know.
Not for you, the sudden flash that lights up your whole life. One split second to snatch at happiness before it's dark again.
Oh, no, please.
Oh, no. Didn't I kiss you? These are all your kisses. It's all your life. Look at your hand, Miss Brown. No, your left hand. Yes. Yes, it's your wedding ring, Miss Brown. I put it on your hand as you said. But my mother's. You see how wild the dream can be. But you are wise and sane and cool. You needn't be afraid, Miss Brown. I will leave you alone to hunt.
Please don't walk so fast. Thank you very much. About you being lonesome. Other people are lonesome. So lonesome, I must get up waiting. Mr. McAdams always said I was crazy. And then just because a foolish mechanic didn't have all the necessary parts for a car, I think I knew all the time, deep down in my heart, someday, somebody, somehow, even though it seems so wide at the end of the world.
Oh, thank you, my dear. This sounds so nice. Mr. and Mrs. George Scovesco of Azusa, USA. My dear wife will arrange permission for me to join her there in only 4 weeks. Tequila.
Thank you. Once over the border, I went to a judge. Divorce granted, $50. You're wonderful.
Oh, the credit is all yours, Anita. Or perhaps is it the eternal foolishness of women to keep on wanting eternal fools like men?
Oh, go on, drink your tequila. Such fast work as yours was only luck anyway.
Right. Here. You see this?
What is it?
Well, something I just happened to pick up and put in my pocket. It is a necessary part of a car, I believe.
You
But most just was a ring, I think. That beautiful wedding ring of my mother's with orange blossoms. Thank you for giving your ring to me, Mother.
Thank you, Charles Boyer. Yes, you were a bad one, but you did reform. It's fortunate that the founding fathers of this country selected the eagle as the emblem of America. Had they left it to posterity, those in charge today might have selected the oyster. Because, and many of you will recall the fable, when God made the oyster, he guaranteed an absolute economic and social security. He built the oyster a house, a shell to protect him from his enemies. When hungry, the oyster simply opens his shell and food rushes in for him. But when God made the eagle, he said, "The blue sky is the limit. Go build your own house." And the eagle built on the highest mountain crag where storms threaten him every day. For food, he flies through miles of rain, snow, and wind. And the eagle, not the oyster, is the emblem of America. How proud we should be this majestic bird is our national emblem, the winged one that provides for himself. And when trouble comes, has what it takes to defend himself. He means so much more, is so much more representative of the rugged faith on which this country was founded than the oyster, for instance. Even an oyster with a pearl.
Brought tonight by Jane Russell, Abbott and Costello, and Dorothy McGuire. Good night, everybody. Hear Heather Hopper next Sunday by Dr. Phil Harris. And in just a moment, hear Theater Guild starring Richard Widmark and Nina Fulch in This Side of Paradise. The show is produced by FMD with direction by Gil Faust and music by Frank Wills. This is our pleasure bidding you good night.
This program is transcribed. Hear This Side of Paradise with Richard Widmark next on NBC.